This is Authors' Voices, a podcast of authors reading from their work. Today, I have the great pleasure of introducing James Howard Kunstler. He's going to be reading from a as yet unpublished book, the first time for this series. Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm fine today, David. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I please go ahead and introduce the work you're going to be reading from and go right ahead.
All righty. Well, readers may be familiar with some of both my fiction and nonfiction books, and recently they've been sort of having an interplay between them. I wrote a nonfiction book called The Long Emergency, published in 2005, about the global energy predicament and how it would affect everyday life in America. And after I wrote that, I wanted to write some novels depicting very vividly in a tactile sort of way what it would feel like to live in a post-petroleum American future. And that book was called World Made by Hand. It came out in 2008, published by the Atlantic Monthly Press. And I then wrote a sequel to it called The Witch of Hebron. That book came out in 2010. I originally intended to write four of them, one for each of the four seasons. And in fact, the first in the series, World Made by Hand, took place in the late spring and early summer of the year that concerns us. The second one took place around Halloween. And the third one, which I am writing now, takes place around Christmas time in my little fictional town of Union Grove, New York, far, far upstate in Washington County. The story is about the intertwined lives of the people who live in Union Grove, New York, after a series of calamities and financial accidents and terrorist incidents and other events have altered American life severely, so that people are living without electricity, without the internet, without cars, without really all the blandishments of modernity. And so I guess that may be enough for now for you to know in the background. Well, let me tell you one more thing. One of the principal features of all of these novels is the tension between two groups of people in my little fictional town of Union Grove, New York. One of them is the regular townspeople who have lived there all along. But a second group has come along, a group of Christian evangelicals from Virginia who are escaping the disorders of Dixieland, as they're styled. And they have come and bought the high school in the little town and moved in and established a kind of commune that they hope and expect to turn into their New Jerusalem. They're strange and interesting people. I myself am not a religious person, but I do believe that the future is going to perhaps tend us more towards superstition and the supernatural when Americans become terribly disappointed by the broken promises of technology. And so that's one thing that I've been trying to portray. However, this group of people, this group of Christians who call themselves the New Faith Covenant Church of Jesus, are led by a character named Brother Job. And he's one of my favorite characters in this continuing series of books. He's kind of a combination of Boss Hogg and Captain Ahab. He's comic but dark. And sometimes he appears sinister, but actually he's really quite helpful to the people of town and has helped them take care of a lot of the business of their town that has been neglected for quite a while. So it's around Christmas time in Union Grove, New York, in the future, and I'm going to begin reading to you from my third novel in the World Made by Hand series.
Does the novel have a title yet?
It does. I'm going to withhold the title of the book for the simple reason that titles can't be copyrighted.
Understood.
And I don't want anybody else to take this title while I'm writing it. So forgive me for withholding a really cool title.
Fair enough.
Okay?
We'll consider it a mystery to be unveiled.
Thank you. So are you ready for me?
Absolutely.
2 days before Christmas, in the year that concerns us, a year yet to come in an America much beset by change, Brother Job, pastor, patriarch, and head honcho of the New Faith Covenant Church of Jesus, supervised the finishing touches on his pet project of the season, a tavern and place of fellowship on Main Street in the village of Union Grove, Washington County, New York. Despite the hardship of recent years following the bombs that destroyed Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., and the attendant travails of a collapsed economy and other serial calamities, this was a happy week for most of Union Grove's people. The growing season, which extended 3 weeks longer than in the previous decade, brought a bounteous harvest, apart from the troubling appearance of a previously unknown corn smut in a few farmers' fields. The town had gotten through the year without suffering another epidemic disease of the kinds that had burned through the region in past years and decimated the population. A community laundry was close to opening in the repurposed Union Wayland Mill building beside the Battenkill River. It was the first new enterprise of size that the town had seen since the modern age drove itself into a ditch, a joint effort between the regular townfolk and Brother Job's New Faith brethren, who had arrived in late spring seeking refuge from the disorders elsewhere in America, and bought the vacant high school, and moved their 78 members into it, and done much to stimulate a revival of community spirits in Union Grove for all their odd ways. Being Christmas week, a palpable air of festivity energized the town. Fur swags festooned the porches, and wreaths hung on doors. Lighted candles on windowsills flickered defiance against the year's longest nights. Men and their children dragged balsam trees out of the woods, and pine scent filled the crisp air all over town. Women pinned bright red sprays of winterberry on their knitted hats as they went around trading and visiting. Horses wore holly sprigs on their cruppers as they clip-clopped along the streets. A bright sense of the holiday affected even the gloomier personalities around town, those who struggled with adjusting to the new ways in the new times. All that was missing was snow. The bare ground made everyone impatient for a new look. It had rained a few times the weeks previous, but when colder air finally swept through, it felt as dry as the distant Canadian prairie it came from. The farm laborers who lived in the village had the whole week off, with most of the year's work completed. Many were out and about in town enjoying their rare leisure, stopping to chat with friends and visiting the other Main Street businesses that the New Faith people had set up, including now the barber shop, the smoke shop, and Brother Job's haberdash, as he called it, which sold new-made clothing to people who'd been running through the last ragged remains of their old off-the-rack manufactured casuals from the old times. Russo's Bakery had received a shipment of scarce wheat flour from Albany that Stephen Bullock's Hudson River trade boat brought up on its weekly run. And the bakery shop window was filled with Christmas cookies, confections, fruit jellies, panettones, gingerbread men, and a wondrous great Bûche de Noël, the buttercream frosted roll cake tricked out like a Yule log, baked just that afternoon with meringue mushrooms and holly leaves of filbert paste, and which was rumored to be destined for Bullock's own table. Einhorn's general merchandise store had laid in a stock of goods made by hand, intended to please children. Sleds, chessboards, lacrosse sticks, dolls in costumes that looked suspiciously like the New Faith get-ups, puppets, a rocking horse, skittles and bowls, knock hockey, marble mazes, jigsaw puzzles. There was nothing electronic on display, and few of the town's children would have remembered what they were like. Terry Einhorn kept a big pot of cider warming on the wood stove for customers. His chore boy, Buddy Hazeltine, who had the mind of a young child, wore a floppy Santa Claus hat and a broad smile as he carried in an armload of stove billets from out back. He loved this time of year when the store was so busy. Brother Job's new Union Tavern stood at the center of all this activity, in the generous corner storefront where Van Buren Street came to a T at Main. The space, in a fine three-story red brick business block with marble steps, lintels, and string courses, had originally been built to house Alger's drugstore in the year 1902. It was operated by Alger's grandson until 1981, when a Walgreens opened in the strip mall at the edge of town. The loss of the soda fountain alone was a blow to the life of the town. For decades after that, the shopfront was given over to Luddy's Pizza, with a big internally lighted plastic sign that spanned the frontage and turquoise paneling that covered up the whole Main Street facade, including all the upper story windows. The interior was a motley assemblage of vinyl, linoleum, stainless steel, and other clashing materials, made to look even worse by the harsh fluorescent lighting. In those days, Americans virtually lived on pizza and consumed it in settings that would make livestock feel queasy. As it happened, the entire Luddy family perished in the Mexican flu epidemic, and that was that. Meanwhile, the wheat scarcity, the lack of gas for ovens, and changing work routines put an end to the century-long pizza craze. Like a score of other shop fronts along Main Street, Luddy's remained dark and vacant for years as the economy sank. Brother Job's crew had taken off the turquoise paneling to reveal the old brick and the graceful arched upper windows. Then they set about gutting the first floor interior, including the now useless stack of pizza ovens, and rearranged the kitchen in the back. The renovated middle room featured cherry wood wainscoting, a selection of cast-off sofas and easy chairs disposed in sociable groups about a big wood stove, and a row of cozy booths along the other wall. Removing the greasy old drop ceiling revealed magnificent old pressed tin, 12 feet high. Up front, the New Faith crew had installed a 20-foot-long cherry wood bar. Backed by an impressive array of mirrors above a row of kegs that contained the best ciders, beers, and ales produced around Washington County. The original transom that spelled out Alger's Drugs in ethereal green, sapphire blue, and opalescent yellow stained glass had been rescued from the basement and was back above the door, while a new hand-painted wooden sign over the breadth of the frontage spelled out Union Tavern in ochre letters that looked like old gold on a black-painted background, with a stencil of a welcoming pineapple at each end to denote hospitality. Both outside and in, the place was decorated for the holiday with pine garlands and holly. Brother Job paced fretfully in the front bar room, stopped, and pointed up at a chalkboard menu behind the bar. "What do you mean, hot soup?" he asked Brother Micah, the bartender and nominally manager of the new establishment, which would open its doors for the first time to the public in just a little while. "Hot soup," Brother Micah said. "Everybody knows what that is." "All soup is hot," Brother Job said. "Why not just say soup?" "Well, you say hot to give folks the idea that it'll warm them up on a cold day, make them feel good inside," said Brother Micah, who had once worked in a Golden Polenta franchise back in the old times. Brother Job just stared wearily with a sour expression on his face. A wintry ache crept through his joints. Along with all his other duties and responsibilities, getting the tavern ready had worn him out. Back in the middle room, two New Faith sisters bustled about. One set out jars of New Faith red hot chili sauce on the tables in the booths, and another lighted candles in the tin wall sconces. Daylight was fading at 4 o'clock in the afternoon at this time of year. A painted sign that hung beside the wood stove said, "No card playing, marijuana, spitting on the premises." "Ain't it self-evident that soup is hot," Brother Job said. "Oh, it's the psychology of the thing," Brother Micah said. "You see?" "Huh, psychology," Brother Job muttered. "I'll take a dram of whiskey." "The Battenville light rye, the Eagle Bridge corn, or the Shushan, what have you?" "What have you? Did they stick a possum in the barrel or something?" Oh, it's not half bad. I'll try half a dram then. Sounds indifferent. It's different enough. Brother Job scanned the other menu items on offer from the kitchen as he sipped the whiskey. Ham plate. Cheese plate. Hard sausage plate. Pulled pork plate. Variety plate. Chicken liver fry up. Meatballs and gravy sauce. Corn dodger with pepper jelly. Tater tots, our own. Cheese toast, pickled eggs, pickled peppers, mixed pickles, popcorn. What all is the darn soup anyway, Brother Job asked. Split pea with lard cracklings, I believe, Brother Micah said, as he pounded a bung valve into a keg of Holyrood special Christmas brew, Pear Scrumpy, a carbonated cider with greater than average kick. And that's all I'm going to read.
Oh, that was terrific.
That was terrific. I'm not the greatest reader, but there you have it.
I know, it was really good. I want to read more, so that's always a good sign.
Well, I got about 100 pages now, and so I'm about a third of the way through it.
So maybe this comes out in 2014, if we're lucky.
Well, I don't know. I got a May deadline. I really got to pound the fucker out.
Yes, you do.
I do.
Well, listen, that was really wonderful, and I appreciate your reading it to us.
Well, you're so welcome, and you're such a nice guy yourself, and I'm so glad that you're down there sharing the planet with me and all my serfdom and loneliness.
Well, thanks. That was terrific. You've been listening to Authors' Voices, a podcast series of authors reading from their work for Writer's Cast. Today you've been listening to James Howard Kunstler reading from a novel as yet unnamed and unpublished. It's the third in a series that begins with World Made by Hand. Thank you so much for listening.